We're having a party, kind of. Today, we're celebrating how one organization has built strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Join us as we reflect on 40 years of making an impact. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. There are very few issues about which I feel more passionate than affordable housing. Thus, my invitation for you to join the party, because it's exactly what we'll be talking about. And I so admire and respect our guest and the organization she leads. Habitat for Humanity Tucson is celebrating 40 years of making an impact in the Tucson community. They have built strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, building homes, changing lives, none of which they have accomplished would have been possible without the support they have received from generous donors, from devoted volunteers. Like, their volunteers are beyond the pale in even trying to describe how they have helped build this organization, and partner homeowners. They're part of this conversation. So please join me in welcoming a pretty regular guest and pretty amazing human being, T. Van Hook, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. It's great to have you here, my friend. And I do have to say, you are the first in-studio guest in the new Mrs. Green's World studio since COVID and since we changed our location. So it made me smile. We had a lot of things to work out, and I wasn't nervous because it's you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you and to really share our joint passions for the environment, our community, and affordable housing.
So it's always interesting to me, and I've thought about this, how cool it would be if we had like a six-person crew and Dave could be here working on the buttons and somebody could be videotaping from the minute you come into the studio. Because that conversation that we had in the 10 minutes you were here kind of changed the direction that I think this show should take in very important ways and very critical ways, because we're not talking about homelessness. We're talking about people, they're the forgotten ones. And when you talk to me about that, I remember from being in social services most of my life that there's this middle groundswell of people that don't quite qualify for this because they're not poor enough, and they can't quite afford this because they don't make enough money. So the impact of COVID and all of this jumbled in of what's happening is about people in that group. In like Middle Earth, that we have to really put a spotlight on, because if they can succeed, it does raise all ships.
It does. And when I think about my childhood growing up, I grew up in a modest home. My parents made well below the median income for Arizona. So I didn't grow up in a house where they thought I would grow up and lead an organization. We were just working week to week to buy the groceries, pay the mortgage, and those types of things. In that time period, which I won't say, let's say the 70s and 80s, it was possible for a family that made below the median income to purchase a home in Arizona.
Totally.
Absolutely. So when we think about what our parents were able to do it, let me give you a frightening statistic. You've been out to our build sites. A lot of your listeners come and volunteer with us and they build. And we build a pretty similar house, neighborhood to neighborhood. In 2016, the house appraised somewhere around $130,000. The exact same house in 2021 is appraising close to $250,000. So that's showing you what the real estate market is doing. It's making housing further and further out of reach for those families. Those families making between 40 and 80% of area median income. And you say, well, some people are meant to rent, so not everyone can buy a house. Right now, mortgage payments are lower than some rents. In downtown Tucson, rents are hitting $4,000 a month. Rents are escalating across our state and throughout our community, which means that buying a Habitat house is, you know, even more critical. We see more and more families where 11, 12 people are living in two-bedroom apartments, three-bedroom apartments, because you have to really double up to afford to shelter your family. It's not safe, certainly, when we have a virus that's really altering our lives. That or people are driving. You know, if you live way out of town, if you live in some rural areas, if you live in little pocket neighborhoods that aren't close to employment centers or schools or places where you have access to fresh foods and those other things, rents are much cheaper. But if anyone has filled up their car at the gas station recently, you understand that what you're saving in housing costs is costing you double in transportation for these low-income families. So thinking about people that are in that gap, the people that fall through the cracks, the people that are working day to day. You know, we just on the drive over here, I see people working in landscaping companies. I pass medical and dental clinics where, you know, the person that files your insurance claim or the person that pushes you around the hospital when you have to go from the emergency room to get an x-ray and back, those people are all in that modest category. They're not big wage earners and they're making our world happen. And they don't have a place to live. So the housing crisis and the growing crisis in housing is affecting every bit of our community.
The thing that I hope this mystery is solved in my lifetime, which clearly I kind of like saying, you know, I'm in the third, so I'm really super focused on what I can accomplish in my last third. This is my third. It's perplexing to me that this is not one of the highest priority. And it's not just because you're my friend and you're sitting here and I love Habitat. I worked in social services. A stable home has such a ripple effect in terms of people being able to work and consistently work, in terms of school attendance, and not just attendance, kids being able to succeed in school. So I just want to tell people that say, you know, why we're helping them? I made it, blah, blah, blah. If you help kids succeed in school, they become taxpayers.
Well,
isn't that the end game? They do. They become taxpayers. So doesn't that make sense for all of us to invest in our future, the children?
Well, and adults. So if you look at, there are a myriad of indicators that we use to see if we have a healthy community. Health, availability of schools, food, you know, and nutrition programs, and all of these other outlying indicators about healthy humans and healthy communities, healthy environment, right? It's all interconnected. So if we look at housing as a critical element of that, we know from medical studies that people who have cancer, asthma, postpartum depression, all of these, you know, a myriad of health-related indicators, when they have housing security versus not having housing security, the outcomes are vastly different. So when we are investing in housing, when we're investing in education, we're investing in some of these key factors, and I happen to work in housing, that housing stability costs us as a community a lot less because we're not paying for emergency room visits. We're not paying for some of those ongoing costs. You know, we're all concerned about healthcare costs. Well, if everyone were housed, if everyone had the ability to shelter, if everybody had a safe environment to live in, we would have less ill health. And that's just one indicator. So it's really, really a domino effect. We like to think of ourselves really as a social justice organization at Habitat. We know how to build houses. We're building houses, and we think that that is really key. But there are so many related things to owning the home. You know, it's not just building wealth to end a cycle of poverty. It's also providing all of those other stabilizations that affect our community. And I don't know why it isn't a higher priority. You know, job development in Arizona seems to be, you know, that's the mantra, workforce development.
Right.
And I love that, right? But there's a direct link between housing stability and the ability to maintain a job. If you are unstable in your housing, you can stay in your job for a bit, but you can't keep up the facade forever if you don't have somewhere to have clean clothes, to take a shower and have hygiene, to get a good night's rest so that you can perform your best at your job.
To brush your teeth.
All of those things.
I mean, simple things that are just, you know, we have this expression in our family, that's a first world problem. When we start complaining, because I'm like you, I grew up, there were six of us in the house and we had one bathroom and we didn't think anything of it. Now, God forbid, we should live in a house with one bathroom. Total what first world problem. Total first world problem. So let's talk about, let's go in the weeds a little bit, because it's interesting to me how it's annoying to some people that I can't get my new refrigerator for 7 months because there's a backlog. I can't get my new dishwasher for 7 months. What about things like the cost of lumber? How hard are you getting hit? Because from everything I read, everything, food, supplies, everything is going up. We have a car shortage. I mean, that's so clear. We're not going to be able to get the cars that we want. They're not going to be available, which is bad, but it has a ripple effect on the people that sell cars that typically aren't overpaid unless they're selling the top dealership in wherever they work. So how about costs for things? How hard have you been hit? If you guys could see the face she's making, this is not going to be an answer that sparks joy.
It is not, but it is and it isn't. We have a devoted staff that has worked extremely hard.
You do.
We have community partners who have helped us get the best deals possible. We still struggle to find a range hood or a refrigerator. And, you know, some of the vendors who have traditionally given us paint, appliances, and those things, because they have a shortage themselves for their paying customers. We're getting less of those, although they are, you know, they're still long-term partners. We're still working with them. The cost of lumber has gone up exponentially. It was higher. It's come back down. We look at each item in a house and make sure that we're treating it as a commodity. It might as well be a bar of gold, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're really careful with it. And we've always done that because we've been cost conscious, but we've had to really refine that over the last year or so. The other thing that we're doing, and I know you're aware of this, we're building a warehouse and training center. And that's going to allow us to, when we see a commodity, a building material, we get something donated, gives us a safe place to keep it. Because it may sound a little funny, but when there's a shortage of materials, those materials become a target.
Totally.
Copper piping in some of our houses has been stripped numerous times for people who sell the copper, you know, for whatever their reasons are. That means we need that commodity multiple times. You know, that piece of equipment, that supply that we need, that piece of lumber, that other building material. So, you know, we've seen an increase in theft. We've seen, you know, a lot of things that impact us.
There are companies that do hire, you can see them around town, they hire security overnight because it's gotten so bad, which then impacts the cost of what they're building, and that gets passed down to the consumer in many cases, or it impacts the bottom line for the company. So what about, T, I know that everywhere I go, and I haven't gone a lot of places recently, but it doesn't matter because, you know, we go to Taos a lot because we have family there. I would say every third or fourth day, it talks about the housing crisis, the affordable housing, everywhere you go. I mean, don't even look at places like Denver. Forget about it unless you want to live in a tent. What about rent? How's the renting market here? From what I know, as someone that was looking for rent and had the blessings to be able to buy, to be able to afford a decent place to live, it was very hard to find a rental in my demographic. And I felt so grateful that we did. But what's the rental market?
It's a tight market. And, you know, there are estimates that here in Pima County, we are 18,000 units short in affordable rental in housing.
I had no idea.
So, and that's in affordable units that may have some sort of link to them. So that doesn't include people that are finding auxiliary dwelling units or partitioned houses or house shares and other things. Those are direct units, folks that are on a waiting list for some program or trying to work things out. The other thing, rents are up. Building materials are up. And during the pandemic, we had a lot of older homes with older residents. They didn't want anyone in their house during the pandemic, and rightfully so. But let's say you had a small problem with your cooler on top of your house. It leaked a little. Well, over a year, as it's leaking and you don't want to have a repair person at your house, it eats away at the roof, and now you may have mold.
Mold.
More work inside. So we're seeing with our elderly and disabled populations that we're working with, that a home repair that was a few thousand, you know, maybe an HVAC system,
right,
is now catastrophic because it's sat for a year.
The ripple effect.
Yep. Again, it is the ripple effect.
Yep.
And that's just hurting all of us. So it's rents, it's the cost of new housing, the cost of living in general, which takes a bigger bite out of people's budgets, doesn't allow them to save for down payments or other programs. Luckily, there are a lot of programs out there. And if, at least in Arizona, they could go to the Arizona Department of Housing. If someone has trouble maybe being evicted, you know, for rent or their mortgage, and there are new programs through various stimulus packages that can help them. But even those
it's still a crisis. And you just don't build 18,000 units, that's for sure. On the very positive side, going back to, we talked about how housing helps your have better health, more stability for the family, better success with education and jobs. What I have seen, and I haven't done nearly as many builds as I wish that I have, and I have plenty of left in me to continue doing them, is that when you go into a neighborhood, which are typically what I would call high risk, lower income, maybe not so pretty. I mean, I'm not being judgmental. I'm not being judgy. I observe, I see. That so Habitat shows up after very judicious selection of areas, and the community starts to shine a little bit more. Things start to improve. Is that something that I made up by driving through those neighborhoods, or does that really happen?
It doesn't. And part of that is we try to go in and work with the neighbors. It's not just plop, here's some new housing and get used to it. It's what does your neighborhood need? How are other ways that we can support? How are other partner organizations able to come in and help improve the neighborhood? And that's a balancing act. And we have to work closely with the city and county governments and others, because we also don't want to make improvements that price people out and create a bigger crisis than we already have.
Right.
And
right.
So there's a real balancing act. But we're always excited. Copper Vista at Drexel and Park, where you've been many times, a brand new subdivision is going in right next to us. And so...
That's not yours?
That is not ours.
That might not have been there. I'm just going to make that conclusion. Might not have been there if you hadn't done it. I mean, there's lots of really good connections.
There's lots of really good connections. But, you know, it's that one step at a time. It's the ripple effect in a positive way.
Really positive way. It looks good. And my good news today, I was on a Rotary board meeting call this morning, and we're going to be reaching out to you because we want to do a home build at our Rotary Club. And I think that is heightened awareness among the haves, that we, the woke haves, that we have to help because it helps everybody. And I was really excited. I'm like, oh, that's great. T. Van Hook is coming to my studio. So Rotary and, of course, Chapman is a really supporter. TEP, I can go on. And then I get blamed for, like, giving shout-outs to my sponsors. They deserve it because of all they do to make the community as strong as it is.
And we learned during the pandemic that, you know, we talk about the haves and have-nots. A lot of our homeowners have really been touched by the Tucson Foundations, the Stonewall Foundation, and the United Way and folks that gave their mortgage assistance to home buyers who just had to show that they had a COVID impact, which means that we haven't had a foreclosure on a Habitat home. We haven't even had any really serious long-term delinquencies. Because if you show, you know, I'm on reduced hours, I've lost my position, they've reorganized, whatever those impacts are. And as we know, they're throughout the community in every sector. We're able to, through the generosity of those three organizations, pay the mortgage on behalf of someone.
Help keep them in the homes.
And so we've seen great generosity, great spirit. And, you know, we can only have a few volunteers at a time because we are trying to social distance. We're trying to not be a hot spot for COVID. But those volunteers are out there and they're working their tails off on a really regular basis. So the community may not see the big builds where we have 250 people and big news stories, but little work is happening and extraordinary heroes are rising to the top during all of this.
And towards the end of the show, we'll do a call to action. And I can certainly do some anecdotal information adding because of me thinking all I could do was pass out donuts, finding out that was not true because I do have some skill set when it comes to like painting. But let's talk about good news. Chuck, tell us about Chuck. I mean, it's like I have a big grin on my face. My shoulders were hunched down. I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And then let's talk about Chuck.
So the Connie Hillman Urban Construction Knowledge Center, or the Chuck, is a great place. It's a warehouse where we're going to be able to continue our relationships with local schools and Pima College, where folks can come in. We can build indoors. We can increase people's skills. And then what we'll do is take those wall segments out and combine them with the work that we were doing on site to continue to build stick-built houses. The Chuck Center is going to allow us to build past noon in the summer because there'll be some climate control, which we don't have when it hits 105 degrees at 11 a.m. It'll extend our building hours. It'll extend educational opportunities to the community, and it will, we think, increase our productivity multiple times. We set out to raise some money. The Connie Hillman Family Foundation stepped up first. Stonewall came in, an anonymous donor, recently Bank of America, the Union Pacific, you know, Long Realty, some of our long-term, really wonderful donors, Saddlebrook, have stepped up. But this week, last Thursday, Governor Doug Ducey announced a $1.85 million for the Chuck Center. So we will be receiving...
Whoa, where's my bell? I want to ring my bell. I don't have it now. I don't know where it is.
So
that's amazing.
We're super excited. So at this point, you know, we're continuing to raise funds for programming to build the houses and to make it the best possible center we can. But what a glorious thing to have recognition. And money.
Recognition and money. We need money too.
And several members of the Arizona House of Representatives from here in Southern Arizona pulled together to help make that happen. And we couldn't be more excited that we were included in those funds.
That's a big, big, big one. And I'm not sure if you mentioned it, even though I'm sitting here intently listening, being fully present. Isn't Chuck going to help with workforce development and job training for those people?
Sure.
Or did I make that up?
No, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, I call them training opportunities for the community, right? Because workforce development.
Right.
You know, so it's going to expand even on what we're doing with our homeowners and with the volunteers that come out. You know, a lot of our volunteers come out because we're deploying the newest technologies in construction. So if you want to learn to do something on your house, just come for a few days. We'll teach you how to do the construction.
What an opportunity.
It's such a great opportunity. We have so many skilled volunteers. We have people that are, you know, literally retired tradesmen that come to work for
us. And
they
treat it as a full-time job.
Absolutely.
I've seen that. It is a full-time job as though they were getting paid. And they probably ask if it's okay if I take vacation. I've seen it with my own eyes over the past 15 years.
They'll notify us they're going on vacation.
We're going on vacation. Is that okay?
We do have a few volunteers that work almost as many hours as our team members that are paid. And that's just, it's awe-inspiring.
You couldn't do what you do without them.
No, we could not.
That's the message. The takeaway for me, and I want to go in one by one now, perfect segue for how you're going to be able to help if you're listening to this podcast, because it isn't just about money. It is about so many more things you can do to help support this mission and in turn build a stronger community that you live in.
That's right. So it's the time, and you hit the key right there. You're not just building a house for a family. You're building a home that is transforming a community, providing an opportunity, and sheltering a family. So, you know, it's win-win-win. So we love our volunteers. And you can't do construction? Come into the office. We have reception positions. We process all of the volunteer paperwork. There's plenty to do in our office at the Habby store.
We have to talk about that because that was one of my last two questions. It's I have a story for you. A friend of mine who has means, to say the least, he bought a condo here in Tucson, and he said, "I need stuff. Like I need everything. Where should I go?" And I mentioned two places, Home Style Gallery, which is repurposed, reused on consignment, and Habitat for Humanity's Habit Store. He texted me. And the stuff that he found at the Habit Store, and I will say it goes for me too, you go in, you have to go back, you can find really good stuff for your house, like on steroids. And when you're on your way over there, look around your house to see what you can bring to donate that fits within the things that you need for donations, because it's a win-win. It's like a trifecta. Get rid of some stuff that you don't want in your garage, like unopened paint and things like that, and then go and shop. So there's many. Who couldn't be happy signing up to do some shopping?
Well, again, when you're a volunteer, you know, you come in and you get to see all the good stuff. Certainly, you know, financial support is always terrific if that's something people can do. But I would say the most important thing anyone listening can do is share information about affordable housing, about what a crisis we're in, and maybe a resource like Arizona Department of Housing, Habitat, one of our partners here in the community. You know, the more information we're sharing, the better chance we have of reaching families that are in need and don't know where to turn. And the more awareness that we raise that, you know, this isn't a them and us. We are all in this.
It's us. It's our community. And the stuff that's happening going on downtown is so sad to me, even though it looks beautiful. It's gentrification on steroids. I understand it happens. And then I know the people in South Tucson. I've been working with the House of Neighborly Service, and I was in a meeting, want to participate, have been helping get resources to them, and the number one issue that they raised that is a fear of the community is what? Gentrification. They're worried about people coming in, and South Tucson is a bedrock of community traditions and families and closeness. So it's just, it's everywhere. And they just don't want it to spill over because it's pretty darn close to downtown. I don't want to end. I have a final question for you. Of course, I always do. I have two questions, but I want to remember to do this. I would love it if people went to habitattucson.org/40th anniversary, because that page is what I call content rich. It's not boring. It's fun. It gives you a snapshot of what you have accomplished. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that because I did my homework. It's like, I'm not just going to do a shout out. I'm going to tell people why they should look at it, because I did. I spent some time there and it's very happy. So two last questions. One is, can you tell us about the first house you ever built? I love history.
Oh, Habitat ever built,
yes,
or I ever built?
In Tucson.
Okay, yes. So I can tell you a couple of quick antidotes. Number one, we made the mistake of calling the family to tell them they were in the program on April 1st of 1979. And she thought for a few days that it was a joke that a friend had called. And so it took a few days for them to really
this is really happening to us.
And they came back and built the house. And at our 35th anniversary, they came and spoke. And their adult son talked about his own home ownership and how important that house was to him. And Gina, this is why. After they'd been in the house a couple of years, his sister was struck by a car in a school zone and died. And he said, had they been going apartment to apartment, he wouldn't have a place to remember his sister because he was 6 when she passed.
Wow.
But they still live in that family home since 1980.
God, if you're kidding me, I was going to ask you that. Are they still there and it's on Plummer Avenue,
and
right?
And he says that it's a place where he goes and has memories, where his children can now come and have memories with their grandparents, and that the house means so much more than just the brick walls and a place to
so does.
Be.
Change the trajectory of their lives. No question.
No.
No question about it.
He's very eloquent about that. Yes.
Okay. I love it. I got to come to one of those. My last question is, what is your vision for the future? Not just yours, but your team. And is Habitat building a future 40 years down the road? What do you see? I mean, it's really tough out there, kiddo. And I had three people in the past 2 weeks have severely been impacted by COVID. It's not gone. I go around and like I wear a mask just kind of as to show that I'm in concert with the whole mask mandate. And then I wonder like, is because I'm vaccinated, blah, blah, blah. But COVID is here. It continues to raise its ugly head. There's a ripple effect if the last case was reported today in terms of shortages and delays and increased prices. So do you have a vision? Can you get out of all of that's going on and say, yeah, Gina, we're still dreaming the big dream?
We are still dreaming the big dream. This is probably, as you know, my last podcast with you.
Yes, it is.
So it's someone else's dream, and it's so exciting that we'll have someone. And we are poised to move forward. We have the Chuck opening. We have, we're looking at land. We are continuing to refine our programs, to recruit families, to look to volunteers, to spread the word that affordable housing is critical to our community. Habitat is here. You know, we'd love to work ourselves out of a job, but in the last 40 years, the problem has expanded. We just have to continue to expand to address the need. And we need the community to help us do that.
Forever and ever. And I want to just clarify that why it's her last podcast. It's not because she's not a great guest, but T is making plans for her future. And there's a national search for her position going on as we speak. And it is certainly bittersweet to me because we have formed a friendship. It's one of the most amazing things of this Mrs. Green journey. And why I get so upset if people say, oh, you're just promoting a sponsor. I have long-term friendships that will be around forever, long after the Mrs. Green's world has taken another direction or whatever. So I think I just want to take a deep breath here and press pause because you're the first one to come into our new studio. It has worked great. Thank goodness for Dave and for my wonderful husband, James, to get all the equipment because we only had to have my mic working and my sound working. And it's a dance. And that it is your last. It's really, really bittersweet for me, my friend. And I just want to end by saying, up until you go off on the next journey, which I'm sure I'll be jealous, keep on doing what you're doing. We need you. We need your team. We need your positive impact to the very end on this community. We need every volunteer and donor support. And I am so hopeful that people listening, I rarely do as passionate a plea, but it is such a cause of mine to get involved in some way. And don't think that your $5 a month is too little. If you can do five, do it. If you can do 25, do it. If you can do 100, do it. And if you can just show up for one home build a year or donate stuff to the Habit Store, everybody listening to this podcast has the ability to get involved in some small way. And you might have other charities, dogs might be your thing or whatever, but investing in this, in affordable housing, creates a brighter future for all of us. So thank you, my friend. I don't want to start crying. I'm close to tears, but I feel blessed and blessed to have had this partnership with Habitat Tucson for a long time, my friend.
Well, and it's a joy to be here. Habitat is strong and is moving forward. And, retirement is going to be delicious.
I love that word. You go, girl. And I hope all that is true. You'll be, when I call you in 6 months, you'll be saying, oh yeah, I'm volunteering for this. I'm doing that. And Roger and I are making 7,000 cookies for somebody. It's like, it's okay. So everybody, make it a great, green, intentionally lived day. And if this isn't your thing, find something. Because if you have the ability to listen to this podcast on one of your gizmos, you have the ability to give back and say thank you for all that you have. So thank you, my friend. I wish you the best on the next part of your journey. Thank you.